Welcome to PMA Takes on Tech, the podcast that explores the problems, solutions, people, and ideas that are shaping the future of the produce industry. I'm your host, Bonnie Estes, Vice President of Technology for the Produce Marketing Association, and I've spent years in the ag tech sector. So I can attest, it's hard to navigate this ever-changing world in developing and adopting new solutions to industry problems. Thanks for joining us and for allowing us to serve as your guide to the new world of produce and technology. My goal of the podcast is to outline a problem in the produce industry and then discuss several possible solutions that can be deployed today. Stout Industrial Technology collaborates with customers to build and launch industrial technology solutions that are designed to last. The Smart Cultivator combines a proprietary, agriculturally proven mechanical platform with Stout True Vision technology to eliminate weeds and cultivate ground in a single pass. Visit stoutagtech.com. That's stoutagtech.com to learn more. With little farming land, Singapore imports over 90% of the food consumed in the country. The food at local markets mainly comes from overseas. In 2019, the government announced its 30 by 30 policy agenda, aiming to produce at least 30% of its nutritional needs domestically by 2030, while also strengthening and securing its external food sources. In April 2020, the Singapore Food Agency established the $22.6 million 30 by 30 Express Grant Scheme to help local agri-food producers rapidly increase production in three key categories: eggs, fish, and leafy vegetables. In September 2020, nine urban farms were offered $29 million grants by the Singapore Food Agency as part of efforts to support the growth of local agri-food enterprises and ramp up local food production over the next 24 months. And then in February 2021, the Singapore government announced that it will dedicate $45.2 million for a new agritech fund that will focus on supporting farmers through the use of technology that ultimately boosts domestic food production. The purpose of the Agri-Food Cluster Transformation Fund is to help farmers through the use of technology in local food production. So there's much focus by the government to develop technology and produce food in and for Singapore. Singapore is also a financial hub with a number of investors willing to put money into early stage technologies, along with a talented and trained workforce. Today, we will hear from three very different voices on what is happening in Singapore in ag tech. First, Benny Chung from SG Innovate will talk about the companies they are investing in at this time and why food and ag are important. Next, we will hear from Fung Yok Un, who with her husband is building a vertical farm. And finally, from Adrian Teo from Demoto, a global commerce solution company for the produce market. Let's drop into the conversation with Benny. We have with us Benny Chung from SG Innovate in Singapore. Welcome to the show, Benny.
Hi, thank you for having me. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi. So tell us a little bit about yourself and also your role at SG Innovate.
Okay, so you've got my name already. I'm Benny Chung. I'm an assistant director here at SG Innovate. And I focus on the agri-food investments that we do as a company. So SG Innovate is a Singapore government-backed early-stage deep tech venture capital firm. We focus on a number of areas of interest, and these include agri-food, smart manufacturing, healthcare and biomedical sciences, and sustainability. So in a nutshell, that's what we do, but we also focus on investments from the seed stage all the way up to Series B for a first investment. And we also have a global investment mandate, so we're not just limited to investments in Singapore itself. We've done investments, for example, in the United States and Israel, and interestingly, all the way in Estonia. So it's a good mix right there.
Yeah, great. So what do you personally focus on? Do you focus on all those areas, or do you focus more on the food side, or what's your specialty?
Yeah, so I focus very much on agri-food. And the way that we approach agri-food investment, we are a bit of an early stage seeker fund of sorts. So I'm sure our listeners here today would be very familiar with the likes of Temasek or GIC, or at least heard of these companies. Uh-huh. So they are our primary investors in a number of different areas. So we try and identify the up-and-coming trends, investment trends in the areas that we invest in. So in agri-food, we look at things that we have not invested just yet, but could be interesting for them in the next 2 to 5 years. And we focus on investments where there is a technology defensibility. So for us, that's where we would try and catch an early wave and take the early risk and identify possible winners in the next couple of years.
Oh, that's fascinating. That kind of brings me to my next question of just talking about the ecosystem. So you mm-hmm. kind of serve a little bit as a feeder of identifying those trends earlier than some of the maybe the larger investment companies, you know, would. So tell us about the ag tech ecosystem. And it really seems to be growing and thriving in Singapore. So what does it look like and what sorts of companies are involved?
Okay. Well, that's a question with probably a very, very long answer. So, in there. So as a country, we're not a very big country. As our listeners, I think, would know, Singapore is a tiny place. It doesn't even compare to some of the cities in the United States in terms of geographic size. But interestingly, although we only have, say, about 1-2% of our land use for agriculture, we produce 10% of our food just from that, which isn't too bad, but it's just 10%. So the Singapore government, you know, we have seen all of the disruptions posed by, you know, COVID-19 with the issues around the Suez Canal. And food security, food resilience is a big topic for us. So the Singapore government, through the Singapore Food Agency, which is the regulator here in Singapore, very similar to the FDA, or somewhat similar to the FDA in the States, set a target of producing 30% of our nutritional needs by 2030. So very catchy, 30 by 30. We are doing this in a number of different ways. On the agricultural side, there is a push towards automation, towards providing more land for our agricultural needs. So we're developing, for example, a agricultural park, very similar in many ways to a business park, 18 hectares, which isn't big by United States standards, but in Singapore, it's a big deal, in the northern part of the country, where we will be, you know, setting aside land for farms, for poultry, for livestock, for the growth of different crops. So we're looking into that space. We're encouraging the people also to look into having their own family plots, if you will. A lot of the people here in Singapore live in high-rise flats and condominiums and so forth. But we're using some of the spaces available even in these flats to have little plots of you know, homemade gardens, if you will. So we're encouraging that in small ways so that people, you know, have a feel for that. So that's at that level. At the corporate side, there are a number of different companies involved in agriculture in Singapore. It starts all the way from the producer side. So I've briefly mentioned about the farms that produce our agricultural crops and work with livestock. So we've got a number of these sorts of companies. A number of them are modernizing. So just the other day in the news, there was this sheep farm that is moving into a 6-story facility, I think in next year or the year after.
Wow.
Where, you know, they will be able to take care of all of the sheep in a clean way, keep them comfortable, make sure that the temperatures are all right for them, no stress. So that there are things that we are doing around these areas together with the corporates here in Singapore. So you've got the producers along further down the line. You've got folks that help with the food processing. You've got folks that help with the supply chains. So And this is a company that you've already heard of. It's a portfolio company of ours, Kimuto, that does the supply chain and logistics for fruits as a start. They're looking at other products as well, but fruits is a first start. And they have signed a number of different deals with different companies all around the world, but you know, it's all built from Singapore. So we've got producers, we've got the people down the middle in food processing and supply chain and logistics. We've also got a big emphasis on food and food tech. So, you know, we've got the likes of Grab based here in Singapore that does, you know, food delivery. You've got so many different restaurants from so many different places. You've got, of course, all of the new up-and-coming food tech companies developing new ingredients, new foods. So it's a really, you know, growing and vibrant ecosystem of food and agri players that we have in the country, but we're looking, of course, to grow it out. One thing I forgot to mention is Bühler and Givaudan, the large food processing companies. They have a joint lab that they're setting up, opening end of this month, actually, looking at plant-based food processing. So, you know, exciting things are happening in Singapore. I'm happy to dive more into each of these if there's time for that. Great. But again, sorry, long answer to what should have been it's a short question, but long answer.
Yeah, well, there's a lot going on, so you have to answer along. So you mentioned the 30 by 30 from the government. So is the government actually putting money in? Is the government one of the investors in trying to build the ecosystem?
Yeah, so the Singapore government does provide a fair amount of support. Some of it's financial, some of it is through, you know, different initiatives and schemes and programs. Scheme tends to have a bit of a negative connotation overseas, but here in Singapore, you know, scheme is a fairly neutral word. It's just, you know, a program. But we do have a number of these initiatives that the government has put forward. Singapore government acts as a catalyst in a number of different ways. We don't intend to crowd out private sector investment. It's just the kickstart what was already happening. So there has been a lot of interest in from agri-food players to come into Singapore to do something here in Singapore, but we just want to kickstart that, move that along a lot faster, and then let private sector take over. But to your directly to your question and to your point, we, for example, have $144 million set aside in the next couple of years to fund a number of these initiatives. And hopefully, you know, when more and more private sector players are coming in, setting up facilities, putting in their resources, then government can then taper back some of these initiatives, some of this funding, and let private sector run with that. So again, in a nutshell, the Singapore government is here to help, but not to crowd out the private sector and take over the private sector's good work.
So in funding new technologies and new companies, where does the money come from them? I mean, there's companies like you, but are there other investors that are involved? Do corporates help fund technology? And are there other investors outside of Singapore that invest in technology in Singapore?
Oh, yeah, for sure. So regionally, Singapore is a financial hub in Asia. And so that extends also to venture capital and private equity investment. So I've already briefly covered some of the public sector investment entities here in Singapore. So there's SG Innovate, Temasek, there's GIC. There's also EDBI, which represents the Economic Development Board. So there are a number of these players, but there's also, you know, a very large private sector interest that we have as well. A number of these firms are based here in Singapore. And they invest very heavily in ag food, or they're starting to invest more heavily in ag food. So we've got the full gamut here of accelerators, incubators, going up to your VCs, your private equity firms. A number of the corporates also have invested alongside some of these financial investors. So corporate VCs or the corporate arms themselves come in and invest directly off the balance sheet. So we've got that. And because of our status as a financial hub, a number of foreign entities have also, you know, decided that this is a good place to invest. And setting aside the fact that we are a financial hub, you know, we are also a hub for science and technology in the region. So we've got a number of great facilities here, state-of-the-art facilities, people who have been well-trained, who speak a number of different languages. I speak to one, not very well, but I speak to a number of Singaporeans are able to do at least two. This is a center of commerce, of science and technology. So it does bring together a number of different actors who are interested to invest to support companies growing out of Singapore.
This may be hard to answer because I'm sure it's different for every single person, but you know, a lot of the people in the US that go into ag tech and really are trying to develop technology for food grew up on a farm, and that's mm-hmm. their background and that's what they know. Yep. We also have a number of people who are people who grew up here where I live in Silicon Valley, and they're the tech side and they try to take that to agriculture. Since there are not that many people in Singapore that grew up on a farm, how do people get interested in agriculture and food? Like, where does that interest come from?
Okay. A number of ways to answer this question. First of all, Singapore is a foodie nation. we come from many different lands. So, you know, our folks, our ancestors, they came from places like China, India, the Malay archipelago around us. So the one way that has helped connect all of the people here in Singapore is through food. So that's you know, it has always been an area of interest. And there are some uniquely Singaporean dishes that you wouldn't find anywhere else thanks to the mix that we have. So in the first place, the nation as a whole, the people here are naturally inclined and predisposed to be interested in food. That's the first thing. The second thing is, in spite of our small land size, actually historically, a number of people grew up on small family plots, tiny, really tiny by global standards. But we lived, and at least my parents' generation or my grandparents and the ones before them, they lived in tiny family plots where they could grow their own fruits and all of that. So my mom has a lot of stories about growing all sorts of different fruits, durian, which is not very popular overseas, but there's durian, there's papayas and all of that. So the older generation, they still have memories of their own family plots, of growing all of these things, of being self-reliant, of putting food on the table through their own hard work, doing it and growing it by themselves, and fishing and all of that. So we've had that historically. It's just as the country has modernized in the last 50 years, some of that has gone away, but our natural interest towards food, you know, the older generation's interest in growing their own food, that I think hasn't quite gone away just yet. So there are, you know, people who are still interested to, you know, for one, get into food because they're interested in it. Two, to rediscover their roots and to find out what exactly it was that their parents or their grandparents found interesting. So there are these factors at play. I can't say that everybody would naturally be interested in food just because of these two factors, but naturally interested in going to food as a career or agriculture as a career because of these two factors. But these two factors, I think, have helped a number of people rediscover agriculture in Singapore and want to take part in growing the space. So again, a long answer to a short question.
No, that's fascinating. It's really interesting. You just wonder how people end up, you know, getting excited by food. And those are great reasons. So are there any technologies that you see are needed, you know, or any solutions that technologies could solve that you see are needed that aren't being developed or that you're hoping new technologies will start being developed? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. We are excited about a number of different things. On the agricultural side, I think we're excited to find ways to reduce the incidence and prevalence of disease in crops and in livestock and in fish stock. So that's one of the directions in which we are exploring. Whether it's possible to develop better vaccines or probiotics or products of that nature in which we can then help increase these yields and reduce disease. That's one aspect that we are exploring. The other, I think, in agriculture is to maximize or to increase yield. I think the Green Revolution in the 60s did already show that, but a lot of it is geared towards countries where, by and large, there's plenty of space. So in a country like Singapore, where there's not a lot of space, we're still trying to see how we can bring up the yields. And that's something that's something else that we're considering as well, so that we can surpass our 30 by 30 goal. On the food side, we are looking at different things that we could potentially do. I think we have gotten to a point here in Singapore where we've modernized, we've become a first world country of sorts. We've gotten all of the developed world issues, if you will, around obesity and diabetes and all of these chronic conditions. So we are looking at what we could do to replace, for example, or reduce fat and sugar and salt, and yet not compromise on taste. Because one thing that consumers can't quite get around, even though they want healthier food, is you know, eating less tasty food. They can't deal with that. Mm-hmm. So if you want healthier food, you will still need to at least maintain the taste, if not make it tastier. So we'll be looking at new ingredients that could potentially play that role on the food side. So broadly speaking, in terms of themes, those are things that interest us very much. We're looking for new technologies in these areas.
So a lot of the companies in Singapore, when they develop products or they look at building a company, are they looking at mostly the Singapore market, or are they mostly looking at, we're going to make a product here and then sell it to the global market, or some mix of both?
Well, it's probably more of the latter. The market here in Singapore is tiny. We've got about just over 5 million, close to 6 million people in Singapore. If we want to compete on a global stage, we can't just sell for this market. So all of the startups that we invest in, we need them to have a global mindset. We would love for their businesses to be anchored here in Singapore, so they can do all of the R&D here, product development here. But if the target market for sales is only Singapore, that's not interesting. It's not going to be a global winner. And for us, we need to be punching above our weight. Because otherwise we would be, to be very frank, an insignificant speck on a global map. So we're pushing towards having all of our companies here in Singapore adopt that global mindset, where it's great to be anchored here in Singapore, but you also need to think about how you can reach the global market, how you can sell to different people overseas. And that's really the goal for companies here in Singapore.
I used to work in industrial biotech for some period of time, and worked for a company that we had a lab in Singapore, and we worked through the economic development group, and just the incentives to have a lab in Singapore were really good, the financial incentives, and then the talent was amazing. You know, the people that we could get to work for us that were really good biologists were, you know, was surpassed in many different places. So, you know, you've got a lot of advantages there, you know, of having some support and then having really great talent. So that's a great place to build companies for sure.
Well, thank you for your kind words. We do need to, we can't rest on our laurels. So it's a lot of pushing up and above and beyond where we can. Yeah.
Yeah. So can you talk a little bit about the companies that you're currently either just invested in, or think, you know, you probably can't talk about the ones you haven't invested in, but just kind of what are some of the investments that you've done recently is my last question.
Okay. So here in Singapore, that we invested in Demoto, like I mentioned earlier, there are a couple of other companies that we invested in. I think for us as a company, we're focused a bit more, slightly more on the food side. So we for example, invested in a company called AI Palette that does a bit of social media listening, and identifies food trends that are upcoming. So to just give an example, there was a little bit of food trend a couple of years ago where there was this salted egg yolk mix. It may sound a bit weird to foreign listeners, but salted egg yolk mix, which has this very nice savory feel to it. And people started adding it to all sorts of different products, so your salty egg yolk burger and all of that. So the problem for FMCGs is identifying when such trends occur, and AI Palette is able to do that through social listening. So, and this trend, if I may take a step back, well, it came up because a cafe started serving certain products that included this product, the salted egg yolk mix. And people started sharing on social media, this is great, this is wonderful, it tastes fantastic, smells great, you know, all of that. And people started picking it up, and it went cafe to cafe to cafe, that started copying that. But FMCGs were slow on the uptake for the product. So I think about a year and a half after people got excited about it in the cafe, we only start seeing it, you know, appear on shelves. FMCGs were, okay, this is interesting, let's try something. McDonald's came onto the bandwagon. So AI Palette then serves as a way for FMCGs, for big brands to try and short-circuit the process. They discover that people are interested in a particular food trend, and they start working on products that potentially can be served to ride that wave. So that's a company that focuses on that. As an investor, we've been around for 25 years now. So we have invested in a couple of companies in broadly egg food. Even before this term was big here in Singapore, so we've done, you know, restaurant, for example, restaurant AI ordering, even before it was a thing. So we've done a number of these things in the past, but we're trying to ramp up. And like I said, we don't just invest in Singapore, so a number of our investments are overseas as well. We invested in an Israeli company, for example, that does sugar replacement. Uses a sweet protein to replace sugar. Tastes exactly like it. I tried it. Wonderful. And it doesn't have any insulin response. So it's potentially going to be a life changer for diabetics, where the taste of your drinks, your food doesn't change, but you don't have any issues in relation to diabetes. So we're, fingers crossed, very excited about that product.
What's it made from? Is it a plant, or is it through fermentation? What's it made from?
Yeah, so it's from fermentation, but it's based off a sweet protein that's only found in Africa. It's a fruit that's quite rare, very easily bruised, can't be easily transported overseas. So they looked at the characteristics of that protein that's produced from this fruit. They you know, rejigged a bit of the protein, but interestingly, it's a non-GMO. And they ferment it then, and that protein is added then to your drinks and to your food products. You just need a minute amount of it because it's super sweet. It's 3,000 times sweeter than sugar.
Wow.
So, yeah. It's a product we're excited. Yeah. It's a product we're excited about.
I'll have to look that up because, yeah, that's, you know, people have been trying to solve that one for a long time. So that's really exciting.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So we're looking now, other than alternative sugar, we're trying to look at alternative fat, alternative salt, alternative, you know, anything that can help us be healthier, have the same food, have the food taste the same, and it's cheap. So we're looking at things like that.
Great insights from Benny. We will now hear from Feng Yok Un talk about building her vertical farm business, followed by Jimoto's global commerce company. So please tell me a little about yourself and your business.
Okay. Well, actually, the chief driver of my farm is actually my husband, whom I call the chief farmer. He actually comes from an IT technology telco background. He's been doing that for like 30 years, and he took an early retirement and he suddenly thought of doing farming. So he did prototyping for a couple of years in a small greenhouse space up in the north of Singapore. I think without actually a background in farming, you need to do a lot of trial and error, a lot of research. And that's what he started doing. I've come from a marketing business development background. I was with a statutory board in Singapore called the Economic Development Board. They promote a lot of investments in Singapore. I was there initially for a couple of years, and then I did hit hunting for a couple of years. And I've actually been a stay-at-home mom for the last nearly 20 years now, and getting back to work right now.
So when did the business start? When did you start? When did he first start?
We actually started doing a bit of market research about 2019. We started to speak to some restaurants and people who were maybe interested to be our customers. And it was a real chicken and egg situation. You know, we approach a restaurant and they tell us, oh, okay, that's good. Do you have any samples? Can we come and see, you know? And they say, oh, we haven't started yet. But it was also very difficult for us to say, look, let's plonk in, you know, a couple of hundred thousand to do this without actually knowing that the business is out there. But we went through this situation where we couldn't move on and we said, okay, we'll do this. And my brother, who is a who owns actually his own law firm, decided to put in some money as well. So we decided to just start up. And this was in late 2019. And we were in the midst of fitting out when 2020 came along in March and April, and we were in complete lockdown. So everything had to stop. Our contractors were stuck in Malaysia. They couldn't come out to Singapore. Equipment couldn't come in. So basically, for the whole of 2020, our premises was just left empty. We couldn't get restarted until late 2020. So we basically really started up, well, we started planting late 2020, early 2021. So really effectively only January this year.
So are you supplying customers now, or are you still in the testing phases?
We've gone through, I think, 2-3 cycles now, and we've started initially with planting our kale, and that's done quite well. We are still talking to restaurants, but I think in the time that my husband started prototyping 5-6 years ago till now, a lot of vertical urban farms have started in Singapore. One or two have gotten very big, but there are also very quite a number of small companies like us who started up in a small premises. Ours is about 3,000 square feet. So there is a lot of players out there, and it's getting very competitive. And as we approach restaurants, you know, they come and tell us, look, we've got a lot of suppliers. Pricing is a big issue for them. So it's been a bit difficult to break into the restaurant market. So in the meantime, we've decided to do more of an online business. We're building our website right now, and I think what we would like to do is to do subscription boxes. So there will be a weekly box of 5-6, you know, farmers' picks of varieties. We hope to get you on board. You know, if we do numerous orders, we'll do free delivery. There'll be a free pickup, and I think eventually we might also like to do a membership scheme where if you pay a certain monthly or yearly fee. You know, the price of the box will go down. There'll be sort of, you know, sort of different sort of concessions to it. So I think for a start, we'll do that because I think it would be easy to get those numbers in for the beginning stages while we work on selected restaurants to market to.
How will you do the delivery? Will you do it yourselves, or is there a service that will do the delivery for
you?
Yeah,
we've got a vendor who'll come in and do the delivery because we don't expect to be doing a daily delivery. You know, if you order the vegetables by Friday, Saturday, we'll deliver by Monday and maybe another one for midweek. We also will offer a pickup service. I think Singapore is very small, so it's not difficult to do deliveries. Yeah you know, you can't drive more than half an hour from one end to the other. So, yeah.
And what are you mostly doing, leafy greens or what all are you growing?
At the moment we're doing, we've got a lot of kale. We've got about 3 varieties of kale. We're doing curly kale, red kale, Toscano. We also have a lot of basil, Mizuna, summer rocket. We do wild rocket. We've done some kailan, bok choy, and we've also done strawberries.
Strawberries, wow.
Yes. Amazing. Very difficult because they need lots of TLC. We germinated in December and I think we saw the first fruit in March. It's not very consistent. And it's actually one of the restaurants we provided samples to. They really liked our strawberries because they look like wild strawberries. They're not very even. And the texture is a little bit unique. And she wanted like 100 pieces a week. And we said we can't deliver. It's very difficult. I think it's a showcase for a lot of farmers that they can grow strawberries in Singapore indoor. But I think to do a consistent delivery and volume and of quality as well will be very difficult. So I think most greens, we can do herbs. We're doing also radishes, several varieties of lettuces. We bring bok choy and ice plant. So I think most leafy greens are growing quite well. We just need to get the consistency of the cycles to make sure that every week we have 5-6 varieties growing, and maybe to actually change varieties on a weekly basis so that if you order a box from us, the next box will have 2-3 things that are different.
Mm-hmm. That sounds great. So do you plan to expand? Do you think you'll build another facility, or is this just doing this one going to be plenty?
Because we are kind of really at the first stage right now, because ours is a vertical racking system. So right now we're only doing two levels, not even fully two levels yet. Maybe half of two levels. We can go up to 4 levels, but it will require lots of equipment in terms of actually going up vertically quite high. So I think we would like to see how the subscription boxes go. I've started some initial marketing on Facebook and on IG as well. So I'm trying to develop a sort of interest with it. So, I mean, for a start, we've gotten quite a good following right now. So hopefully when the orders come, we want to launch the website actually sometime this week so that you can order for next week. We plan to harvest in a week or two. So let's see how the numbers grow. I don't think we can do even 50, 60 boxes for a start because we haven't built up the volume. And it will be sort of a step-by-step approach.
Did you get any funding from the government? Is the government support businesses like yours, or is it mostly friends and family that invested?
Well, the Singapore government is actually on a real campaign and mission now, and they have a 30 by 30 target. To grow 30% of what we consume. I think COVID highlighted the problem that we are very reliant on food exports. And if there were to be another complete shutdown, I think it would be, you know, very difficult. We can't stockpile a lot of food, and especially perishables, we can't do that. We truck in a lot of our vegetables from Malaysia. We are very reliant on that. So when COVID happened, it was difficult. They had to find sources from elsewhere. So the government has, in the past 2 years, has launched a $30 million grant to help farmers build up their production in Singapore. But as you know, we are very land scarce.
Yeah.
So what they're trying to do is also to get the traditional farms to actually re-engineer themselves to do a lot of high technology farming. So it means compact spaces, but building up, but using a lot more technology so we don't use a lot of labor, which is expensive in Singapore. So there's a very, very big drive. We've approached Singapore Food Agency, who's the lead agency in Singapore to promote the sector in terms of getting grants. We are still in discussion with them, but they would like us to also prove that we're very technologically advanced. So you need to be able to put in parameters where, you know, your use of lighting or your use of water has improved in terms of using technology. So your productivity improvements have to be there. So we are talking to them. So the government is very supportive. But I think small businesses, it's also difficult because we're in a starting up mode. We have to think about the business. And yet we have to put up this huge proposal to get to prove to the government that we are very productive. We've applied a lot of technology to actually get the grants. But in the last budget, in fact, the $30 million has already been used up. Because there are a lot of small urban farms now. I would suspect there are about 10, 15 now. Mm. So there's a new tranche of about 30, 40 million that they've put in the budget to for this sector. And it's not just for vegetable farming, but for fish farming and prawn farming as well. So there's a lot of aquaculture. I think the fish farming has also advanced a lot in Singapore in terms of doing it in indoor spaces.
Please tell me about yourself and your company.
So my name is Adrian, and I work for Demoto. I'm the chief operating officer for Demoto. Demoto is a Singapore-based blockchain traceability company. We started in March 2019, so we're a little over 2 years old. And we have, developed a solution that allows us to use blockchain to track and trace produce from farm to table. And primarily, trying to solve issues like, trade disputes arising from the lack of data visibility in our suppliers' trades, but also on the retail side, helping retailers understand where their produce comes from, and then also allowing them and empowering them with the tools to then be able to engage with the end consumers. Yeah.
Great. So there's so many services packed into that answer. So who are your main paying customers? Like, what part of the chain do people actually pay you and extract the value? And then can you tell us about some of the customers, and then what are some of the services that people use the most?
Yeah, great question, Bonnie. So, actually that short introduction I had wasn't all the services that we provide, actually. But the main key customers that we target are the ones, who are actually supplying it. So the farm producers, or even a packing house, exporters even, because they are the ones that, in the first place would get the most pain points. So I'll give you an example, right? So we have several customers out of, Europe, Southeast Asia, but they do trades with China, right? So a lot of times what they face is, buyers from China would, tell them that, hey, as a result of a quality issue, when we receive your goods, we're just going to write off 20% or 10% of credit note just as claims, right? But and the suppliers would then be puzzled, right? Because they're thinking, wait a second, I sent this in great conditions. It's been a painstaking harvest season for us. We've put so much love, tender loving care into, ensuring that the products are great. Sent that over, and now you're telling me there are issues. And many times, how do they tell you that there are issues? They just send, a couple of WhatsApp pictures or, some random images that, it can be a bit dubious in that sense, because you don't really know exactly where those images come from or which box they're talking about, et cetera, et cetera. So that just creates a lot more, confusion for the suppliers. And at the end of the day, just to save the relationship with the buyer and to ensure that, their networks into those markets are stable, they would, absorb those costs, right? But as you know, once you keep on absorbing these costs, it adds up to your bottom line.
Yeah. And especially now with COVID, like, it's not like you could go visit and say, show me what happened. So that's really interesting. And so when you go to make a sale, like you go to a supplier, and is that kind of what you lead with? You say this will help you handle those disputes. Is that the main selling point?
Well, it really depends on what our suppliers or what our customers are looking for. So many times, they might explain to us that, hey, they don't have a traceability system. So, then we come in and say, hey, here's a full package traceability system that's on the blockchain, and we connect to the others on networks as well. But then there are customers who come in and say, hey, I've got issues with trade disputes. Can you help us solve that? Now, there's another service that we do provide, which is really a value-added service as a result of being able to see very clearly the data points within your trade. And that's actually the financial services aspect, right? So for example, I got off a call, yesterday with a new sort of company that sells blueberries and strawberries out of South Africa. So really awesome branding, really awesome marketing strategies that they have employed, but really new company. Although they have, 20, 30 years of experience in that industry collectively. But they're at a stage where they really want to break out of just the South African market into the global markets, either is it in China or Southeast Asia, but they don't have the working capital to do that, Right. And as we all know, we're all, you know, tied down to what the buyers or, you know, your end customers' payment terms, which can be prohibitive sometimes, actually all the time, in doing more business, right? I can speak just for, you know, Singapore and Southeast Asia. Typically, we get, you know, in excess of 30 to 40 days, 30, 45 days upon arrival in terms of payment terms. And that's something that, you know, many of the suppliers worldwide in Europe and Americas aren't too happy about unless you have a ongoing and long-standing sort of relationship. And because of those long payment cycles, your working capital is locked up. And when it's locked up, you face a lot of issues trying to grow and break out and compete with your other competitors in that market as well. Now, then layer on issues like trade disputes and claim issues on top of that, and you can imagine your payment cycles are just going to get extended way beyond that 30 or 45 days, right? So where we come in, Demoto comes in, is that we're able to help you digitalize your trade from farm to the table, the entire, you know, documentation level, product level, have that all visible on the platform. Some of this information are put on the blockchain so that we can ensure transparency and trust. But the beautiful thing about, you know, having your information digitalized on the platform now is that we invite, you know, financing companies, supply chain factoring companies, credit insurance companies to come in to reduce the risk involved from a payment default, for example. And then we finance either the supplier or the buyer, right? So something like, you know, if we finance the supplier, what we would do is, you know, we would ensure that your products are tracked. We send those information to the financing company. The moment your goods arrive in good condition at the buyer's location, so, you know, up to 70 or 80% of the entire trade value would be, you know, paid to you upfront, right? So Vodi, you can imagine like what that would do for your business if you're able to now unlock up to 80% of that trade value within the next day and then roll that over for more trades.
It's a great service. You mentioned a number of different regions and countries. What is your global footprint? How many different countries are you working in?
I think, you know, we're close to 10, at least 10 countries. I can roll it off like a rep if you want me to.
Sure, go ahead. I'm sure they're on the top of your head.
You know, in Southeast Asia, of course, yeah, Singapore, Indonesia, Malaysia, Thailand. We're trying to make inroads into Vietnam right now and the Philippines, we have a footprint there. And then East Asia, so in China and Taiwan, South Korea, and Japan. So we have really strong in that East, Southeast Asia aspects. Mm-hmm. But we're also from a supplier standpoint, you know, we have, you know, suppliers from Latin America. So we got Mexico, Colombia, Peru, Chile. Now we're trying to tap into Brazil as well. Huge market there.
Yes.
And then, you know, talking about Asia, sorry, you know, Pacific region, we've got Australia. Then moving west, we've got Africa. So South Africa, we're now doing a pilot of soybeans in Ghana. So that's exciting. Yeah. And then interestingly, we're also now doing flowers out of Holland, right? So we are shipping flowers from Kenya to Holland and then onwards to, you know, the rest of Western or Eastern European countries. And then, yeah, UK for sure.
Mm-hmm. So this episode that I'm doing right now is on Singapore and looking at Singapore companies and trying to help the rest of the world understand what it's like to be a business in Singapore. So why did you start your company there in Singapore? What was the reason to start there? Because you were all there, or were there other reasons?
Yeah, Vonnie, I think that's that is the first and foremost reason, perhaps. You know that, yeah, we're all Singaporeans. Gary, the founder, you know, had, you know, runs and is still part of the board of a fruits trading company based in Singapore as well. And that's sort of the natural progression for us to continue being in Singapore. But I think beyond, you know, this obvious reason as well, I think Singapore is a great place to start, you know, especially an ag tech company, anything related to technology. And that's really because, you know, of the sort of ecosystem that the Singapore government has really built, you know, over the past few decades to support such innovations to happen around here. So it's not just from a financial standpoint, you know, where they give those, you know, supports in the form of grants or, you know, funds that we can tap into, but even the sort of, you know, professional support, the intellectual support that happens around here, especially in Singapore, is something that, you know, is very attractive for us to remain in.
These three conversations are like dropping into what a good ecosystem can bring to a sector. Government support, private sector financing, smart entrepreneurs with all areas willing to take risks to support growth. I love that Singapore is both working at developing food for itself and also, as Benny says, developing technology for the rest of the world as well. That's it for this episode of PMA Takes on Tech. Thanks for allowing us to serve as your guide to the new world of produce and technology. Be sure to check out all our episodes at pma.com and wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe, and I would love to get any comments or suggestions of what you might want me to take on. For now, stay safe, eat your fruits and vegetables, and we will see you next time.